brought to you by ConcordiaTheology.org, bringing you resources that support the vigorous life of the mind in service of the gospel of Christ.
Welcome to Lectionary Kickstart. We're sparking your thoughts for Sunday as you plan your sermon or teaching lesson. I'm your host, Jessica Bordolo, here with Dr. David Schmidt and Dr. Peter Nafsker. They're both professors of homiletics here at Concordia Seminary, St. Louis. You can hear all about us in our introductory episode, but trust me, they're pretty good preachers.
We are talking about the text appointed for June 18th, the third Sunday of Pentecost, as we continue to think about the work that God has given us as His church to do in His stead.
And what's the text for this week, David?
The three readings come from the books of Exodus, Romans, and Matthew. We have links to the specific passages on our website.
All right, David, which text would you at first glance?
I want a drum roll. So, which at first glance would I choose, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm going for the gospel reading.
All right.
So, and particularly not because I like the list of names, right? I mean, it's always hard to preach on a list of names,
yep.
Right? No, well, the verses I want you to read are verse 35 and then chapter 10, verse 1. So 9:35 and 10:1.
And Jesus went throughout all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom and healing every disease and every affliction. And he called to him 12 disciples and gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal every disease and every affliction.
Okay, so I had you skip a section, but I wanted you to skip a section because I like the way this is a transformative moment for the disciples.
Okay.
That you're following Jesus, you're watching him do all sorts of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. You're seeing the healing ministry, you're watching him cast out evil demons, and then all of the sudden, are commissioned to do the exact same things. So, yeah. So I mean, you know,
hope you've been paying attention, boys.
I know. Well, no, that's the thing, right? That's the thing. There are transformative moments that happen in our lives, and the question is, why do they happen? What causes these to happen? I mean, I still remember, we won't go into the story, but there was a friend of mine, a very good friend of mine, who passed away, but she was a very good friend of mine on Vicarage. She was just another parishioner, but I threw up into her purse.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes, I did. It's a long story, but I ended up throwing up in her purse, and she looked at me, and she said to me, she said, "I guess we're going to be lifelong friends." And I said, "Why, Anne?" She said, "Because otherwise I will think you're a complete idiot." So there was an event that happened that changed our relationship, right? You know, you take somebody to the doctor, and you're just taking them for a ride, but they receive news of cancer. And on the way home, suddenly you've become different, right? You know, acquaintances become friends. For me, I'm thinking of the ministry of Jesus. You've got these disciples who are following him around and watching him do things, but I'm not sure they ever thought they would do things like that.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting about this idea, Dave, is that you're focusing on the relationship between Jesus and the disciples more than the task he's given them to do.
Right.
Oftentimes we think about the work God has given us to do. We need to go do it in his name. We need to proclaim. We need to love one another, all that kind of stuff. But what about the relationship between the sender and the ones being sent? And that is an experience we all have. We all have been called and we all have been sent to love others. But what does that mean for our relationship with Jesus?
Right. I think that to me is kind of one of the big things here. And I think there are people in their lives who have moments when they discover they've been called to something and their life changes. You know, that they've had a transformative moment in their relationship with their Lord. So that to me is kind of the thing I like about
this. So let's think about that just a little bit. The The sermon then, what you're trying to do is help them. There's a question for you, Dave. And maybe Jessica, if you have thoughts of what would be more helpful to hear, is the goal of the sermon then to remind them of a transformative event that has already happened in their lives with respect to Jesus and their relationship with him? Or are you thinking kind of create a transformative moment through this sermon that then will bring about a change in their lives?
Well, the sermon helps you discover how God is working in your life in a way that changes your self-understanding, changes your understanding of what discipleship is for you, what it means to follow Jesus. I mean, you think, you know, our culture, how does our culture use the term follow, to follow somebody?
Mm-hmm. You think of examples? Facebook.
Right. And what's that kind of a relationship when you're following somebody on Facebook?
I just have to click on their name. They don't need to know anything, and I can unfollow when I'm tired of them.
Right, yeah. So it's at your leisure, right? So it's at your leisure. Anything else?
I mean, they show up in my news feed for as long as I want them to. But
well, and it's kind of weird, right? I mean, it's almost, I hate to say it, but in some ways it's voyeuristic, right? You know, I can have my favorite beverage and just sit here and look at all their stuff without ever having to interact with them. And it kind of makes you wonder about people following Jesus. I mean, there were people who were following to see what he would do, mm-hmm. right? And you might have this kind of, this relationship with Jesus where you're just following him and you're interested in what he's doing, but you never really think of yourself as changing.
Right, right, and that would be really kind of necessary if you think about, I'm looking at now verse 1 in chapter 10, he called to them his 12 disciples and gave them authority to cast out unclean spirits, to heal every disease. Jesus is asking more than just stick around and listen.
Right.
He's
right.
Sending them to engage, and of course you talk about transformation, there's a big transformation in the trajectory of the gospel narrative here, mm-hmm. right? Now he's sending them.
And sending them before they even know about the death and resurrection.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I mean, so it's coming. I think there are some people who come to churches who follow churches. They follow what's going on. They're interested in activities that are happening, but they're not necessarily transformatively engaged. Their lives have not, I don't know, have not been changed deeply by this experience of Jesus. It's more, you know, kind of at a distance. I'm just watching and, you know, and I think a lot of people can easily follow the church at a distance. And what I like about this text is suddenly you're no longer at a distance. You're suddenly brought into kind of the inner circle and you become something different. You're given a different task, you're given a duty, you're sent out to do this work. And to me, it's an amazing moment that
and
I like.
And the nature of the work you're sent to do demands that you remain entirely dependent on Jesus.
Right.
The work that, I mean, maybe we're tempted sometimes to feel like you go to church and you are told what to do and then now you go take care of it mm-hmm. during the week. You go be a better mom. You go be a more faithful employee. But this kind of work, casting out demons, it's pretty clear the disciples will only be able to do this as they have almost a new relationship with Jesus, one of complete dependence, constant.
Well, and then just think about how your relationship with Jesus changes, right? I mean, I had a friend who was suffering from cancer and he needed to have IVs changed. And so he was on a home IV system. And I remember visiting him at the hospital and watching as the nurses came and changed the IVs. And, you know, you're just sitting there watching them change the IVs. But when I knew that I had to do the IV changing, all of a sudden I'm watching it differently.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's, you know, well, there's a life at stake and there's a task at hand. And there's someone who's doing that task that's showing me how you do it. And so I become much more attuned, I guess, to what's going on in a way that is going to change my life or help me care for somebody.
Yeah, I mean, and that makes me think of course, we're still at the beginning of Pentecost, where Jesus sends his disciples and sends the church to continue his work. And that there's a co-worker. I mean, mm-hmm. of course, we're not co-saviors, but we are working under and for and with Jesus as we're sent to be his
Well, and that's the, and that's the thing I like about it is that the section we left out, Jessica, could you read the section we left out, verse 30, chapter 9, verse 36 through 37?
When he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest."
You know, we're just reading at first glance.
Right.
I think I would do some study on Lord of the Harvest.
Hmm.
Where does that term come from? Is it used anywhere else? What would you think if you heard Lord of the Harvest? I mean, because number one, it's a very interesting change because Jesus himself sees the people like sheep without a shepherd. So you've got the metaphor of a sheep and a shepherd, which makes sense to Jesus. But mm-hmm. What he says to the disciples is the metaphor of a harvest.
Right.
So he's not saying, you know, everybody is like sheep without a shepherd. Pray that there's a shepherd for the sheep. Instead, he uses a different metaphor. So one, you've got that metaphor switch, but in the metaphor switch, you're asking the disciples to pray. So who do you think the disciples would have in mind when they're praying to the Lord of the harvest?
Yeah, I mean, without thinking about it, they're thinking about the one talking to them, right?
Well, I'm wondering if they would think of Yahweh, if they would think of God the Father and not Jesus.
Okay, so say more about that.
So that's what I'm doing. I'm thinking that their lives are transformed because their understanding of Jesus has been transformed.
And in a sense, it's being transformed here and now.
Well, it's right in this thing, because notice what happens. Think about this. If I'm a disciple and Jesus says to me, pray to the Lord of the harvest, all of the sudden I'm faced with the fact that, wow, maybe Jesus is the Lord of the harvest.
Right.
I've been following this rabbi. I've been following this teacher. He's doing these miraculous things, and he's praying, we need more workers. And I'm thinking, we need more people like Jesus, right? So mm-hmm. send us some more. and then all of a sudden, the one I was praying to, if I thought I was praying to Yahweh, right? I'm praying to Yahweh, Lord of the harvest, send out workers. And then suddenly Jesus sends me out. Well, number one, that prayer worked pretty quickly. Right?
If like, only every time.
I know, if only it worked like that. So it worked pretty quickly. But number two, suddenly I think of Jesus completely differently. He is the Lord of the harvest, and he has chosen me not just to follow, but to be a laborer in the harvest field. And suddenly all of these works that I've been pouring out, asking God to do, become things that Jesus is equipping me to do. He invites them to imagine the work that God can do, right? And then all of a sudden, when he commissions them, he's inviting them to reimagine who he is and now begin to actually see the work that God can do through people like me.
So you've got me thinking about, my son is 16 years old, turned 16, got his driver's license back in January.
Dude, how old are you? 16-year-old son, crazy.
I know. And so we're teaching our kids to drive a stick shift, right?
Nice.
Because that's a skill that every competent adult should know how to do, drive a stick. So I'm teaching my son how to drive a stick. This is back when he was 15 and a half, and I'm kind of showing him how it works. And then we're down on campus where there's a hill come up, and I say, okay, let's switch spots. And he's like, you want me to go up that hill? I was like, yeah, step behind the wheel. Now I'm here with you. I'm teaching you, yep. I'm guiding you. But of course now Jesus is still empowering the mission.
Right.
But it's this moment where he's saying, okay, you guys, I'm sending you out now.
Right.
Yeah. And that's a scary thought. to be sent out to do the work of Jesus. Sometimes we don't think about how the gravity of that task,
mm-hmm.
and that does, you take it seriously, and this change your view of God, who includes us, and change your view of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What am I here for?
Mm-hmm. And what's the value of having somebody who is kind of outside the system in a position, like say teaching, right? So all of a sudden they're out proclaiming the kingdom, but they're not the people you would expect to be proclaiming the kingdom. Why is that valuable?
But there's all kinds of value in that. People could say, oh, those guys look like me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they know what it's like to be a fisherman because they still smell like fish. You know, those people are like me and they're telling me this.
Right, right.
You know, this is actually, you haven't invited me to go there yet, Jessica, but I will, because I was thinking about which text I would preach on.
I
landed on Matthew 2.
Oh, did you?
And
okay.
Ironically, the verse that you kind of left out was one that I was thinking about focusing on. So maybe,
okay, good.
Maybe these will fit together a little bit.
So you're going to go with Matthew?
I'm looking at Matthew 9, just verse 36, though. Do you want to read that one more time? It's right in the middle of what we're talking about.
Matthew 9:36. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them, because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd.
Yeah, I don't want to mix metaphors and deal too much with the sheep and the shepherd, because as Davey pointed out, the harvest metaphor seems more closely associated with the prayer and the sending.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'd stick with the harvest metaphor. But the two things that stood out to me was the compassion of Jesus, and they were harassed and helpless.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about the crowds there. Now, of course, if I'm going to study this text carefully, I'm going to want to think about who are the crowds that he's talking about. I think we're in Matthew 9, so I think we're still with basically his ministry in Galilee. And so the crowds are probably the Israelites, and they're harassed and helpless. And so I'm going to want to look at, I actually did, I hovered over in Logos.
Oh, okay.
Over the
good.
Word
yeah.
Helpless. And it was interesting because it's a word that really means kind of thrown around, just kind of tossed about.
Wow.
And so there was one of the, and again, I just did this really quickly. But
so it sounds like harassed also.
Yeah. Kind of, one of the word times this is used, if I saw it correctly, was in Luke when there's a demon cast them to the ground.
Okay.
And so that harassed and thrown around, that's the people.
Mm-hmm.
To whom Jesus was sending the disciples. And so I'm thinking about the compassion of Jesus and the condition of the people to whom these disciples are being sent. And this is where you left out, Jessica, earlier when you said they're sending them to teach. Yes, to teach, but also to cast out demons.
Mm-hmm.
That makes me uncomfortable. And these people are harassed and they're thrown around. They're helpless. And so it's the heart of Jesus that leads him to send these people
mm-hmm.
out.
Mm-hmm. And so there's so the church's ministry is really going to, you know, you talk about demonic forces and how frightening that is. I mean, I think also you think about actually encountering and trying to speak into or dialogue with or interact with people who are very hateful toward the church. I saw a picture of a newspaper where there was, you know, one of these rallies and people were holding their signs, and there was some guy, he looked like a really nice guy. He looked like a really nice guy, and he's got a sign, and it said, if Jesus returns, kill him again.
Oh, my.
And I just, you know, you've got this bright, cheery face and this sign that says that, and you think, you know, I mean, my instinct would be don't talk to him because he's already made up his mind. But
right.
Actually, what if I saw him as harassed and thrown about so that he responds that way, you know?
Yeah, and that, of course, that makes you think about Jesus' command to love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you.
Right.
Not as some sort of kind of a death wish type of, you know, go after to hurt yourself, but out of compassion and seeing them as harassed. And I mean, we confess that, right? We confess that all people are sinful and
mm-hmm.
and broken and under the power of the devil. And so now we're just reading the commission of the disciples and of the church in those terms, that we start to look at everybody, those in the church and those outside the church, as harassed and helpless. And the one thing they need is the one who has compassion on them.
Right.
And sends his people to heal.
And it's interesting that to the disciples, Jesus doesn't describe them as harassed and helpless. He describes them as ripe for the harvest.
Hmm. Yeah.
Imagine that, right?
Yeah.
That these people that I am encountering, they're ready. They're ready for the harvest, and the Lord of the harvest knows that. Mm-hmm. So it's not like he's sending me out into a harvest field to try to find something that's ready to be harvested. There's so much stuff ready to be harvested. There just aren't enough people.
Yeah, that really does give you a different tone and a different perspective with which to approach the work of the church beyond its own doors, that the harvest is ready.
And it makes you think, I mean, like the work of the church, I think that's really important, right? This is not individual tasks.
Mm-hmm.
This is a corporate task. This is a communal task. And so you ask yourself, how do we as a community support one another with these visions, with the vision that, you know, Jesus is the Lord of the harvest, with the vision that we are the disciples he's commissioned, and with the vision that whatever it is you encounter out in the world, it's ripe. It's ripe.
Well, what I like about this last thing you just said, David, is that that's inviting further conversation.
Right.
After the sermon,
mm-hmm.
You know, during Bible class, as a congregation, it's giving words and perspective and the kinds of ideas and attitudes that we could then move forward together as the church, together with compassion for all who are harassed and helpless. The opposite of compassion is at least one could be, is anger.
Yeah.
And for angry culture and angry leaders, which is what we have. And we,
right.
Man, we adopt that too much. We take
and
that
And anger
on.
Comes from love, right? I mean,
right.
Something that you love is being hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And anger is how you respond, because you want to defend it.
Right.
You want to protect it. Yeah.
That's all for now. Join us next time when Dr. David Schmidt and Dr. Peter Nafsker take a look at the fourth week in Pentecost and kickstart your Sunday.
It's a long story, but I ended up throwing up in her purse.